Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just 15 bucks a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Sunday the 29th of December, 1969, at roughly 10:30 a.m. When questioned, Alec Yannix told the police,
"Nora left me the day before I went back to work. I got up, made coffee. I took her a cup in bed and said good morning. She did not answer. That day, after 12 years together, even though she had fled a brutal marriage in Mansfield to live a happier life with a quiet, bookish little man who loved her without question, their relationship would come to an end. In the sitting room of their ground floor flat at Kendall Villas in Chiswick, she was putting on her makeup. I asked her if she was going out. She told me she was leaving for good. I told her I didn't want to witness her going. So I put on a coat and walked to the Gunnersbury roundabout and then to Kew Bridge. When I returned to the flat, it was getting dark and Nora had gone. That was the story Alec told to the police. Only none of it was true. Alexander Leonard Yannix was not a monster, but the epitome of meek. Described by everyone who knew him as conscientious, meticulous, and a perfectionist in his work. In his life, he was passive, unassuming and quiet. A man who would rather suffer all manner of inconveniences than speak up for himself. As without a violent streak or an angry bone in his body, he lived his life as a very gentle man. Born on the 5th of August 1927 in Riga, Latvia, being 6 years younger than Nora, they never met. In 1943, following the death of his father, a Latvian Air Force officer who was killed by the invading Russian forces, age 16, Alec was enlisted into the Luftwaffe. Which was not to say that he was a Nazi at heart. As with Latvia under German control, you either volunteered to fight and die, or were imprisoned, then shot. As a young, timid, and ultimately expendable paratrooper, Alec was sent into the heart of many brutal and often suicidal battles on the Eastern Front, where it was a miracle that this bookish little boy survived. Captured by the Russian army in March 1945, he was imprisoned in several concentration camps for months, where he was tortured and starved. As with so many survivors, you may think that the trauma of war turned the meek into a monster. But being good to the core, although plagued by nightmares,
he made the best of a bad situation. And in July 1946, having made his way to a displaced persons camp in Germany, he was given a work visa for Britain. Aged 21, having fought for his country, now he had nothing. Except for the ragged clothes on his back, the meager meal in his belly, a few coins in his pockets, and whatever courage he could muster. Forced to start again, although he was intelligent and fluent in English, Polish, Russian, and Latvian, as a refugee, he was only permitted to do the most menial of jobs for a pittance. But still, he fought on. As a good man with a big heart, what Alec wanted most was a quiet and loving life. In July 1948, Alec married Ingrid Lebersdorf, and the two moved to Mansfield in Nottinghamshire while he worked as a miner at the Thoresby Colliery. It wasn't a job he was physically suited to, but keen to provide for his wife, and in 1950 and 52, two children, Linda and Robert, he did what he had to. Only this was not a relationship which was built on trust. As Linda would later admit, "My father told me that he'd been trapped into marriage because he was told that he was the natural father of the unborn child." Even though Ingrid was already a few months pregnant by a German soldier before they tied the knot. Desperate to make a go of it, although they separated four times, as an exhausted miner who worked 16-hour shifts 6 days a week, it wasn't his work that split them. In March 1956, Ingrid was sentenced to 6 months in prison for what the Birmingham Post described as, "The children were seen to eat potato peelings, cat food, dog biscuits, and licking out tins." Admitting neglect, although the children were unwashed and ragged, they weren't malnourished, as the neighbours had taken pity on them. As a good man, it broke Alec's heart to see his family split apart. And although he tried to care for them and hold down a full-time job, that same year, being unable to keep up his payments, he too was sentenced to 45 days in prison. And with a ward of court issued, aged just 4 and 2, Linda and Robert were put into care. Upon his release in Easter 1956, being broke, lonely and homeless, Alec moved in with two of his closest friends in Mansfield, with one being a fellow miner called Alexander, and the other being his rather flirtatious wife called Nora. It's true that Nora wanted Alec to live with them as a lodger, to protect her from her husband's brutal fists, but also because she liked him. Alec would confess, "During the Easter of 1956, I went to a party. There I met Mrs. Essence, who promptly seduced me that evening. She told me she'd wanted me for a long time. She offered me a room in their house, and we became lovers. Her husband knew this, but did not object. She was a very attractive woman, Mrs. Essence, who enjoyed flirting, and to my knowledge, she'd had several affairs on the side, and so did her husband." After the court case, at which Alexander Essence was charged with his wife's assault, Nora and Alec moved out, and although, as old friends, Alec and Alexander wrote to each other on a regular basis, Alexander and Nora never spoke again until he tried to divorce her, which failed, as she was dead. With their past behind them, their bright future ahead started badly. As just 1 month later, and in an incident weirdly similar to what would happen to Nora 4 years later, Alec was hit by a scooter, hospitalized for several weeks.
I lost the vision in my left eye. I was registered disabled owing to a back injury, and I had to give up my job at the colliery.
As an unemployed man with one eye, an inability to lift heavy objects, and having never learned to drive, with Nora unable, or as some say, unwilling to work, it was all down to Alec. It was while working as a machine assistant at a printer's that Alex's persistence paid off. As after 4 years of corresponding with Dennis Green, a respected aviation author, that a new opportunity arose. In February 1967, given his knowledge of aircraft and his mastery of the languages, Alec, as a good and kindly man, who although shy was impossible to dislike, got a job as an aviation and military editor at McDonald's & Co. Publishing at 49 Poland Street in Soho. Having come from nothing, he had turned his hobby into a job, his passion into a career, and as a gentleman whose one good eye was perpetually engrossed in military reference books, it was the perfect job, as he was meek, calm, and meticulous. Alec had built a wonderful new life for them both. But there was one problem, and that was Nora.
In February 1967, I moved to London, while Nora stayed in Nottingham. I'd visit her every weekend, where she accused me of not trying hard enough.
So although he was paying for his bedsit and hers,
she didn't like staying there because of the presence of a young woman. Nora was often very quarrelsome. She picked on me for trivial things and accused me of making eyes at other women. None of this was true.
In June 1967, 11 years into their relationship, they moved to 22 Tabor Court in Cheam.
She didn't work a single day. She was supported by me, her benefits, and maintenance payments from her husband.
And yet, although half blind and disabled, Alec earned for both of them, as she did nothing. But with nothing to keep her mind occupied, her unwarranted jealousy only got worse.
The first serious trouble occurred when a German friend of mine came to see me with his wife. Nora accused me of making eyes at her, but this was totally untrue.
Which was ironic, as with her being so blunt and domineering, and him being so shy and nervous,
I found it hard to sexually satisfy her.
So when her love for him would begin to wane, if indeed it was even there, looking for love, she would vanish without a trace. Described by those who knew her as promiscuous and highly strung,
she drank too much. She liked to party. And as a popular woman, she was not ashamed to tell Alec of her many men friends, who kept her in fine clothes, money and gifts, and with whom she had affairs with in London and Surrey. The second trouble occurred when she found some pin-up girly magazines amongst my aircraft files.
Coming in, just shy of midnight and half drunk,
she accused me of collecting porn. She said that I was no good as a man in bed. And then she attacked me with a kitchen knife and a kettle of boiling water. I was cut around the face. One of my wrists was scalded. I was bleeding from a wound to my right eye and the back of my neck and hands. I tried to restrain her, but couldn't, and ran out of the flat.
Being 13 miles from London,
I walked to St. Mary's Hospital in Paddington, where I was treated for my injuries.
As proven by the doctor and several stitches. And being too afraid to go home, he stayed in a hotel.
I went back to work wearing dark glasses.
Everyone in the publishers saw his wounds. But with him being such a quiet man, they didn't ask him about it. And being keen to return to his normal life,
I phoned Nora at the flat, and she said I could come home if I wanted to. And so I went back.
It was about this time that his employer sought out a psychiatrist. But with Nora still as violent as always towards him. When she vanished for days on end, although he actually missed her, it was that which gave him relief. As confirmed by his colleagues, Alec would state,
"It was after this time that she began visiting me at the office. She just sat there, watching me work and the people I was talking to. She'd set her mind on the idea that I was having an affair with the office girl. But there was no truth in it at all."
Even his boss, James McGibbon, stated,
"He confided in me that he was having a very bad time with his wife, who was a most neurotic woman. 3 times he arrived at work with bruises, scratches, black eyes, and said that Nora had done it."
On the 14th of August 1968, while crossing the street, Nora was hit by a scooter. Treated by Dr. Lionel Cleveland at the Charing Cross Hospital, he found no breaks and no fractures. And although no evidence of the injury existed 4 months later when she was murdered, she used it to her advantage. Being supposedly bedbound, but able to leave when it suited her needs, insisting that Alec become her carer, to cook, to clean, and to act like a skivvy to assuage her every whim. With him confined to the flat where she could keep an eye on him. When he was at work, she would harass him by phone. From September 1968, although he had moved her to Kendall Villas in Chiswick, a flat better suited to her supposed mobility issues, she became more aggressive, possessive, and vanished more often. With no friends to confide in, Alec wrote letters to Klaus Henk, an old buddy in Berlin, as well as Alexander Essens in Mansfield. In them, Alec stated,
"All I wanted in all of my heart was peace. And that since we'd lived together, it has been a dog's life."
In December 1968, needing a break, Nora checked into room 16 at Latvia House in Bayswater, as she'd done several times before. Alex said,
"I didn't object, because our relationship had cooled off. And I could see that she'd made up her mind to start a different life. All I asked was to make the break as quickly as possible and to part as friends. So out of kindness, he invited her over for Christmas. She arrived on Tuesday the 24th of December, Christmas Eve. The winter was bitterly cold, as a hard frost bit early, and a low fog smothered the frozen ground, as up to 10 centimetres of snow covered large parts of the southeast of England. With his back prone to more severe aches and pains in the colder months, he had no intention of going out. I had a few days off, and I was hoping to spend these in peace at home, reading a book on aviation in front of a roaring fire. Having taken too many days off work to act as Nora's carer, Alec had no money to buy a Christmas tree or decorations. So that year, the flat was as joyless as the air between them. As Nora lay there, wearing a blue slip, her pink woolen housecoat, and if and when she ever got out of bed, a pair of blue slippers. Christmas Eve was also Nora's 48th birthday. Alex said, "I brought her a small bunch of flowers. She was disappointed with my gift." As she sat staring at it, glaring like it was made of poison. "I offered to take her out for a drink," Alex said. But all she did was grumble, complaining this was the bleakest birthday ever. On Christmas Day, they awoke, lying separately in twin beds. And although again she grimaced with a face like a smacked arse at the meagre but thoughtful gift he had given her, she had given him nothing. By that point, our relationship was cool, and we only just managed to tolerate each other. So looking to escape those four walls for at least an hour, and to sing some free booze and maybe some free nibbles, they headed upstairs to the flat of their landlady, Dr. Streetchy. In a pleasant little party, at which Nora bitched about everything. Boxing Day was a washout, as all Alex could recall was, "I cooked a meal, we stayed in, but didn't argue." He didn't even have any alcohol to drown his sorrows, so the 27th was no better. "She spent most of it in bed. The only time she got up was to ask me if I'd cooked anything."
"You've not done enough shopping," she said.
And yet the 28th was even worse. "I asked Nora to come out for a drink. She laughed in my face and said,
'You have no money.'
She said I could not afford the drinks she liked. She said she knew people who knew how to treat her as a lady. And I said, 'If you know those people, why don't you leave me and go?' But she laughed in my face and repeated,
'I'm going when I'm good and ready.'
I didn't want to argue, so I stayed up reading in the other room. It had been a dreadful Christmas, which marked for him 12 years of misery and abuse. Sunday the 29th of December, 1968.
was the day that Nora died. In his first statement, Alec told the police,
"I got up, made coffee. I took her a cup in bed. I said good morning. She did not answer."
Although in conflict with his earlier statement, her autopsy would show that she didn't get dressed and she didn't put on her makeup. As still in the bedclothes she would be murdered in, everything Alec said about going for a walk was a lie. In his confession, Alec said,
"She was sitting up in bed while I was hoovering. This was midday, and she was taunting me all the time."
As being as threatening and vulgar as she always was, she spat at him, "I'll see you ruined," and licking a nigger's ass. As with Alec, her faithful servant, failing to please her, she barked, "Can't you work any faster?"
I did not answer. I just kept quiet.
Alec didn't like to argue, as being meek and mild. Instead, he put his head down and gritted his teeth. A few hours later, she fell asleep, which was the festive blessing he'd been waiting for. Only it didn't last. When she woke up,
she demanded an omelette made of a dozen eggs. I tried to break 12 eggs and to make it in 2 pans. She was sitting up in bed, and she said,
"What is that?"
I said, "That's the omelette you wanted." She shouted,
"You stupid fool, you can't do anything right."
So far, it had been an argument as ordinary as any other. But after so much abuse, both physical and mental, Alec was about to snap.
At the beginning, I was silent. But then I began to answer back. I went out of the bedroom, and Nora got out of bed. She screamed,
"You are nothing but a bastard. And your mother was nothing but a whore."
That made him mad. But then, everybody has a breaking point. And his, she was about to reach. Upon several neat shelves were his treasured possessions. His medals, his photos, the letters from his daughter, as well as the one thing that many people said he loved even more than he loved Nora. As neatly arranged in alphabetical order were his aviation reference books. They were this meek man's passion, and she knew that. She shouted, "This is all you're interested in. Books. And I'll see you have none of this left." As she started to pull them off the shelves and tear them up. Everything he had worked for, everything he had sacrificed for her, she was destroying. Alec would confess,
"At that moment, I couldn't control myself any longer. Between us was a broken air pistol which was lying on the bookshelf. I grabbed it by the barrel and hit her on the back of the head with the butt. She spat in my face. I couldn't control myself and started hitting her. I don't know how many times. The butt plate broke. I must have gone mad, as while she was falling, I hit her again. There was blood all over the carpet. I listened for a heartbeat. It was there, but it was weak. Then I just sat down and cried. I didn't know what to do. I wanted to call for an ambulance, but it was too late. I wanted to call for the police, but who would believe me? And now, Nora was dead. Alec was alone in his flat, his girlfriend's dead body at his feet, and the weapon in his hand. What was I to do? He asked himself. So being desperate, even to hide her from himself, I dragged her between the two beds, and I covered her up with a sheet and pushed the beds together. He didn't know if anybody had heard them fight, so just in case, I tidied up as much blood as I could with newspapers. I wrapped the air pistol in some rags and put them in a carrier bag. Then I went to work without sleeping a wink and ditched the pistol in a rubbish bin near Chiswick bus station. But still, in the flat, was her body. I didn't know what to do, as he wasn't a maniac or a monster. Alec Yannix was a small, slim man with a blind eye and a disabled back, who struggled to walk more than a mile, let alone move the stiffening corpse of a 9-stone woman to a place where he could bury her without being seen. He couldn't pull up the floorboards, as the landlady would hear. Turnham Green was too public and open to dispose of her, and he didn't have access to the cellar or the garden. He couldn't trust anyone to help him. He didn't know anyone who would. He had no skills in butchery. He got queasy when he had a nosebleed. And he didn't drive or own a car. And although seasoned detectives would assume that Nora's body was disposed of by a monster, everything he did was for the very first and the very last time, as this had all been a tragic accident. He had to get rid of her, but how? As the only skill he had was as a bookworm, who was meticulous.
Small details are big surfaces, tight corners are odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns, so you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Not terrible. Well, there we go, folks. Oh, let's hope I can edit this okay. Oh, it's evening. I don't normally edit in the evening. I don't normally record in the evenings because I'm too tired. I'm going to take your little hat off. There we go. I wrote that episode quite quickly. It took me a day to write that episode. Normally, in the old days, it used to take 5 days to write an episode. Now I'm getting better at writing, learning to write and piecing everything together and not making it flow properly and not worrying about stuff too much. So that just took me a day to write, which is a fucking miracle for me. So I got to the point, I just thought, maybe I'll record it tonight. And I thought it's a good thing to do, but then I realised it's evening and the little annoying little shitty parakeets are out and going, meep, 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 meep. So I'm going to have to edit those out. My neighbour, who's had their engine on most of the day, had switched it off, so I thought it's a good time to nip in. I'll just nip in now, record, and try and get this done before the twats come along on their bikes to and from along the canal. And then just as I started recording, my neighbour put their engine back on. If you're wondering why the world is in a shit situation and why we've got environmental problems, I think it's my neighbour. I think it's entirely my neighbour. They just engine on all the time. Never, don't get it. Anyway, I thought I'd get it done because tomorrow... Tomorrow, which is... 30 days of September, April, June, and November, the 31st of January. Yeah, I'm three weeks ahead already. PCAG is turning up to my little boat, so that's very good. So I'm looking forward to that. We will be recording some new Blue, which is all very exciting. So this will be season 3 New Blue. You had PCAG in season 1, then you had John and Sally in season 2, and then I decided to get PCAG back for 3. So what I'll do, there'll be hopefully a 3-part episode, and I'll put them out in July-ish, because I will be going away in July on holiday. How exciting. How exciting, Michael. You're going away on holiday. 3 holidays this year. The curse... Oh, I mean, it is the curse of my folks now live in France, so I'm... Because they're getting old. I'm trying to make sure I see them as much as I possibly can. It's a pig to go and see them. Before it used to take 2 hours. Now it takes... it's a real nightmare to go and see them. And I can only see them in short windows because there's only one flight in... a week. Really annoying. They've picked the worst place to go to. But then again, they probably wanted to get away from me. So that's good. And then going away with my brother and his family in summer. And then I'm going away to Albania with some mates in end of the year. So that'll be great. All good fun. So. But tonight, I think I'm going to clean up the boat so it's nice and clean for PCAG. PCAG deserves a clean boat, and I'm going to finish my curry. I made myself a nice curry. Maybe I'll go for a little walk. Maybe I need a little walk, or maybe I'll do it tomorrow. Maybe I should clean the boat first and finish my curry. Anyway, have I said welcome to Extra Mile? This is Extra Mile, the unscripted, unedited bit, which is the only blessing is I don't have to edit this crap. I just leave all the crap in and everyone goes, oh, I like the crap. And I go, oh, great, there's more crap to come. So there we go. If you've not listened to this, I mean, it's weird. Oh, if you've not listened to this before, why have you started with part 3? Doesn't make any sense. Go back and listen to part 1. Otherwise, you'll be listening to part 3. Some people do that. Some people message me and go, I didn't understand the story. And I go, what story? And they go, part 3. And I go, or they go, they'll tell me the episode number. And then I go, that's a multi-party. You've started in the middle and they're, oh, well, it was the latest one. Or they'll listen to 3 parts of a 4-parter and then they'll message me going, I didn't understand it. And I go, well, have you heard all of it? Yeah, well, the final part isn't out yet. Well, you didn't say that. Oh, some people. Anyway, such is life. So, yeah, I hope you're enjoying this series so far. It's been, yeah, it's, interesting one, isn't it? Interesting one. So, let me do some quiz questions, then we'll dive into some extra stuff in the episode. You know what's going to happen? The second I finish this, next door neighbour's going to switch off their engine. You'll probably hear it in the background. I might edit it out. I'll try and edit it out. No parakeets. No parakeets, no coots. Really annoying. So let's do this. Let's do the quiz questions and we'll do the answers at the end. So, what was Alexander Yanag's middle name? Did you spot it? It was right at the start. Don't forget, folks, I haven't edited this episode yet, so I may edit out some of the things that become quiz questions, but because Extra Mile isn't edited, there we go. I can't edit it out. Question number two. What job did his father do? I was about to give you the answer then. You could tell I'm really tired. Question number three. What was Alex's first known job in the UK? Question number four. What was the newspaper which reported Ingrid's neglect of the children? Question number five. In that same article, what three foodstuffs were Ingrid and Alex's children said to be eating? Question number six. What similar accident happened to Alex and Nora? Question number seven. What job did Alex do after he... hang on. Oh, I was going to... Oh, I'm going to put on my little woolly hat because it's bloody cold this evening. Hang on. What job did Alex do after he was registered disabled but before he became a book editor? You know what? I haven't written that in. I'm going to write that in. Just in case I forget, because I'm going to remember it now, but maybe I'll forget it in a bit. There we go. Question number eight. Nora attacked Alex because what was hidden amongst his books? And the final question, I've only done nine for these. Question number nine. What hospital were Alex's wounds treated at? So there we go. There we go. Let's dive into some stuff, some extra stuff that may not fully be in the episode. So Alex said, in 1956 I was working at Thoresby Colliery in Nottinghamshire as a coalface worker. Don't worry, that's not a quiz question. I was married at the time and I was living at West Hill Drive, Mansfield, with my wife. At this time, I was living apart from my wife. In the early 1950s, I met... His timelines are a little bit skew-iffy, so I've had to kind of correct them slightly. I had met Mr. and Mrs. Essens, which is Alexander and Nora, a Latvian couple who lived a West Hill Drive at the same time. Mrs. Essens was all... Mr. Essens, not Mrs. Essens. Mr. Essens was also a coalface miner employed at the Allerton Colliery. I had a social friendly contact with the Essenses because they were the same nationality as myself. Since 1950, my marriage was breaking down and my wife and I had separated three or four times. Across those years, Alec and Alexander worked at several collieries, but because they were local miners and because they were Latvian, they kind of got to know each other and became good mates. Hence why, even though the relationship had broken up between Nora and Alexander, and Alec and Alexander still kind of became mates, still were mates and kind of stayed there as well, stayed kind of chums. So Alec and Ingrid had two children. There was Linda, born in May 1950, and Robert 2 years later. It was said that Ingrid was already pregnant by a German soldier when they married. That came from Linda, who said that in her statement to the police. We got in the police file and the court records, there's loads of different statements, so you're able to kind of pick these pieces apart. In 1954, when they were taken into care, Linda was four and Robert was only two. At that time, the family relationship was really breaking down. Linda and Robert went into foster care with Mr. and Mrs. Field at Linwood Manor in Market Raisin, Lincolnshire. Linda had no contact with her father until she was 18. She said that Ingrid neglected them quite a lot. This could have been a post-war thing. It might not be just a bad person thing. Don't forget, people are coming out of years of trauma and then suddenly they have to go back to living normal lives, and there was no real mental health system then. It was kind of like, oh,
buck up your ideas, that kind of thing. Or always I remember my grandma saying that you go to the doctors and they'd recommend smoking. And you go, well done. Okay, problems with your, they call it nerves. You've got problems with your nerves, fine. Here, go and get some cigarettes. Oh, well done. And give yourself lung cancer while you're at it. So as mentioned, the same year, 1956, Alec Yannick's was sentenced to 45 days in prison for non-payment of maintenance. We don't know a huge amount of that, but it seemed to happen at around the same time that his wife was put in prison for 6 months for child neglect. So it was in and around the same time. So it was really, it must have been horrible for the children, because, you know, that their mum goes into prison, and then because of non-payment of maintenance, the court goes, right, then we'll put in the father as well. And you go, but they need a parent there. But obviously this is the courts, and the courts go, no, we need to make sure that they that the law is done, as they always do, rather than thinking sensibly. I'll read a little bit of the article from the newspaper that I'm not going to mention, because that's one of the quiz questions. But this was on the 10th of March, 1955. It says, mother sentenced to 6 months. Children ate garbage and licked tins. The children of a Latvian woman has been seen to eat one thing, another thing, and to lick out empty tins. So there you go, quiz questions. The mother, Ingrid Yannicks, 27, of West Hill Drive in Mansfield, admitted neglecting the children in a manner likely to cause them unnecessary suffering. She was sentenced to 6 months in prison. The bench made a place of safety order in respect to the children. That means to make sure that children were taken out of the family and moved somewhere where they'd be safe, i.e. in foster care. The children's clothing is poor. Mrs. Dawson said, we don't know who Mrs. Dawson is, but I think Mrs. Dawson lived there as well, one of the tenants. Mrs. Dawson said there is evidence they only received one meal a day. They are frequently unwashed. They were not, however, malnourished, as other people in the house had taken pity on them. So that was the article that we got some of these things from. Sometimes there's not a lot in the police files that covers a lot of the details, so sometimes actually news articles can be quite good. Alex's accident. So this was May 1964. I won't mention what the accident is, because I think that's another quiz question. But he said, I lost my vision in my left eye. By that time, Mrs. Essence, that's Nora, he keeps calling her Mrs. Essence, has settled into a flat in Manchester. When I came out of hospital, I began visiting Mrs. Essence at the flat. I would like to add that after my accident, I became disabled and I had to give up my job at the colliery and I became unemployed. We're not exactly too sure what his injury was. He definitely became blind in his left eye and had a back injury, but we don't know exactly what it was. But it was bad enough that he had to be registered disabled. As we know, it was around this time that with Nora and Alexander Essen's kind of the argument that was going on that led to the court case. I didn't go back over it in this episode because I kind of felt that we'd already kind of covered it in the previous one. We'll read this. This was from Alec Yannicks. He said, although I was at home most of the time, this is when he's registered disabled, Mrs. Essence complained that I didn't give her a key to the flat, and this led to unnecessary arguments. I tried to pick up the threads of our relationship, but was not very successful. Eventually, Mrs. Essence and I decided to live together, and we found a small flat in Nottingham in Union Street. At that point, he managed to get himself a job, which is one of the quiz questions. We lived together at 16 Corporation Oaks in Nottingham, but Mrs. Essence didn't like being there because of the presence of a young woman who was a prostitute. For some reason, Mrs. Essence thought that I was interested in her, so for peace of mind, we moved. This seems to be a current thing that seems to be happening quite a lot. We won't mention about the job in Soho, because we kind of covered that, and we're going to go into that a little bit more next time, because that kind of becomes quite important, which is why I've mentioned it a lot. It becomes important later on. What else we got? We will mention more about this in the next episode as well, that Alec is very much trying to rebuild. I've referenced it slightly in here that he's trying to rebuild the relationship with his daughter. When it's at her 18th birthday, he actually is a... My neighbours have just switched off their engine. That's really annoying. You can kind of hear there's peace and quiet now. Oh, you utter bastards. Oh. Although the irony is, if I would have waited till the morning, I would have started in the morning and they would have switched on their engine. But there we go. We'll deal with that next week. Cheam, when they move to Cheam, obviously, she's already really going downhill fast. Alec Yannick said, during all the time we're at Cheam, Mrs. Essence didn't work at all and was fully supported by me, although she used to get maintenance payments from her husband and national assistance, which was benefits. The first serious trouble occurred when a German friend of mine came to see me. That was Klaus Henk, who I mentioned in the letters earlier on. As far as I remember, Klaus Henk was, I think he was best man at the wedding between Alec Yannix and Ingrid, I think. I haven't got my notes in front of me, so it might not be. As always mentioned in here, she's constantly ripping into him because saying that he's not able to sexually satisfy her. As we've kind of seen in the story, she's... A lot of people say that she's quite promiscuous, she's highly strung, a lot of time to herself, and she's always going out partying and drinking and meeting young men. And as it says here, when she got happy, she would lift her skirt. He said that he wasn't able to sexually satisfy her, because he's quite a shy and nervous man. She's quite domineering. But also, he was injured during fighting on the Eastern Front. And he said, my virility was impaired. So we don't really know how he was injured on the Western Front, but obviously, you know, it could be a physical injury. It could be a mental injury. God, it's really annoying that it's so quiet now. It's really annoying. Really annoying. But there we go. I live on a boat, so what am I to expect? If I lived in a flat or somewhere, I'd probably have neighbours playing really crappy music. Nora had loads of men friends who kept her in fine clothes, fancy meals and gifts. She was a popular girl, as well as... her men friends giving her money. She was flirtatious and given to bouts of exhibitionism. This is what it says here. And would often tease men by pretending to strip. As mentioned in one of the earlier episodes, it was unclear in the documentation whether she's of Greek origin or whether, because she married a Greek man, therefore she became kind of Greek origin. Relationships. I don't really know how to phrase that, but so therefore a lot of the men that she was seeing were other Greek men in either Soho, although it didn't really say where in Soho, or other parts of Surrey. I may have edited this out of the episode, I may have kept it in. She had a tendency of selling his possessions without telling him. Like, he would have possessions in the house, things that he really liked, and then he'd just turn up one day and they'd be gone. She would flog them off to make herself a little bit of cash. As mentioned in the episode, quite violent as well. So he would state, I can't remember what. I was cut around the eye, one of my wrists was scalded, and I was bleeding from a wound to my right eye and heavy scratches to the back of my head and neck and hands. I tried to restrain her but couldn't and had to run out of the flat at midnight. As mentioned, this was confirmed by... he did actually go to Paddington, but then he had to go back to his nearer hospital, which was St Helier Hospital in Carshalton, where Dr Rowland confirmed that on the 26th of June 1967, Alec was treated as a result of a domestic issue with a woman. He had a cut over his right and left eyebrows and superficial scalds to his left forearm. He needed stitches and attended as an outpatient across 67 and 68. And he did, when he fled, he stayed at the Cardiff Hotel in Paddington, which is still there today. That's 5 to 7 Norfolk Square, just off Hyde Park. What else we got? We've already referenced her disappearing a lot. That's kind of key. So we've done that before. Her stalking. Alex said, after a time, she began visiting me at my office and just sitting there, watching me work and the other people I was talking to. For some reason, she had a mindset that I was having an affair with a girl from my place of employment, in brackets said to be Moira Scott, but there was no truth in it at all. James McGibbon, who was his boss, said, I had a great and professional respect for Mr. Yannigs, but from spring to summer 1968, it was apparent he was having great trouble with his wife. That's Nora. Everyone calls them, because they're basically like common law husband and wife. One of my staff told me that she, Mrs. Yannigs, i.e. Nora, had telephoned a junior typist, a tall, pretty and very shy girl called Veronica, warning her to keep off Yannigs. Mrs. Yannigs used to come frequently to the office before close of work and sit in her husband's office to ensure, so he told me, that he did not go out with Veronica. Veronica was the last person in the world to be carrying on with a married man. Mr. Yannigs confided in me that he was having a very bad time with his wife, who was a most neurotic woman. He also said on three occasions he arrived at work with bruises, scratches and a black eye. Alec was often in the office wearing sunglasses, and he said it was his wife that did it. I think that's kind of it. I don't want to go into that bit because that is, let's go back and do the quiz questions and then we can do, and then next week we've got part four. Whoa, part four, brilliant. Part four, the final part. Okay, so here's the answers to the questions. Let's see how many of them you got. Question number one, what job? I can't even read. My brain is gone. What was Alec Yannick's middle name? What was his middle name? It was Leonard, although listed as Leonid. Although there's multiple spellings of how he spells Alexandrus as well. Or sometimes it's Alexandrus. Question number two, what job did his father do? He was a Latvian Air Force officer. Ooh, I might put the fire on tonight. It's a bit chilly. Question number three, what was Alex's first known job in the UK? He was a miner. Question number four, what was the newspaper which reported Ingrid's neglect of her children? It was the Birmingham Post. Question number five, what three foodstuffs were Ingrid and Alex's children said to be eating? They were potato peelings, cat food and dog biscuits. Question number six, what similar accident happened to Alex and Nora? They were both hit by a scooter. Although in different reports on this, it does say that Alec was driving a scooter. So it's hard to really... But either way, a scooter was involved. He was injured. Question number seven. What job did Alex do after he was registered disabled, but before he became a book editor? He was an assistant machinist at a printer's. Question number eight. Nora attacked Alex... Because he had what hidden inside his books? Porn mags. Although he would say in one of his statements, I've got it here somewhere, he said it wasn't his, it was a mate's of his from Mansfield, and his mate put it in there and he didn't know they were there. So there we go. And question number nine, what hospital was Alex's wounds treated at? The one we said in the episode was St. Mary's in Paddington. So that was the first one. So I hope you enjoyed that, folks. If you can really enjoy a podcast about someone being horrifically mutilated and cut up and murdered. Horrible. Yes. Next week is the final part. Everything will be in there. Everything you need to know is in there. All the details. So I hope you're enjoying it so far. And we will dive into more next week, which is the final part. I've just mentioned that. I know I just mentioned that. My brain is gone. I'm tired. I'm looking to put the fire on. I want my curry. I've got to do cleaning for PCAG. RPCHE, will you care if it's dirty? I mean, it's not dirty, it's just a bit of a mess. Maybe I'll invite him in and just keep the lights off. Maybe that's the way around it. Yeah, I'm going to have to do some cleaning. Okay, that's me done, folks. Hope you all enjoyed that. Have yourself a good week. Stay safe and be good. Lots of love, everyone. Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.